Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 117, I do believe, right now. This is Dave.
This is Ethan.
And Barry is off on assignment. He's roughing it in Maui. I really feel bad for him. You know, it's always rough to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know. If only we had it so rough. I know. One could wish. This week, I know last week we kind of pulled a gag on people saying, titling the episode Marmaduke. This week we're actually doing it for real. We are actually talking, yes, about Remember Me. So we're going to save that whole discussion for when we get to it.
We watched it. We can't unwatch it.
Pretty much, yeah. I should have grabbed that from Futurama, from the Tales of Interest. Oh, well. Anyhow, sir, what have you been watching the past week or so?
Okay. I watched Youth and Revolt, which I liked a lot.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I think it's kind of chaotic because there's a lot of settings and situations and characters throughout the entire short running time, but I still managed to like it a lot. I thought it had a genuinely interesting and funny tone and style to it. It felt a lot different than like a Judd Apatow movie, for example.
Yeah.
And I could definitely relate to the main character. So
you have a Francois?
Yes.
All right, then.
My dual personality is right here, right now, in fact.
Beautiful, beautiful. And Zach Galifianakis was pretty funny, too.
Yeah.
Although I think Fred Willard might have been my favorite, just the way he goes along with it at the end, I'll just say.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's go. Okay. All right, then.
Next, I watched Andrei Tarkovsky's first film, Ivan's Childhood, which was is about a young boy during World War II. Basically, his family dies, and he's all alone, and he's making his way through World War II, you know what I mean? So
totally, and you can relate to that too, right?
For sure, for sure. Basically, you know, Tarkovsky, that guy's a master of visual storytelling, and there's just lots of visuals in this that are really awesome, like... there's a scene in it that I think definitely influenced Martin Scorsese and Shutter Island. That scene in Shutter Island where, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but the scene where they're Leonardo DiCaprio, when he's flashing back to World War II, and when he's in him and his like platoon, they're in this Nazi house, and there's like all these papers flying about. I think it was directly influenced by this scene in the film where after basically, spoiler alert, the Germans surrender, the Russian soldiers are going through like this German house, and there's like all these like leaves floating about, and I think that visual had to be directly influenced by that. So it's pretty pretty good shit.
Cool. I haven't seen it, but now I will know what to look out for.
Good. Next, I watched another World War II themed film, Michael Mann's The Keep.
How was that?
Yeah, this is a pretty strange an interesting movie, but I think my problem at the end of the day is it's really silly. It's about basically the Nazis. They're trying to like secure this mountain because they're just, you know, they're roaming through getting locations, and there's this mountain with this kind of mystical force within it, and basically night by night as they take hold of it, more and more Nazis are dying. So the two main Nazis, one played by Jürgen Prochnow, who's kind of like the good Nazi, and Gabriel Byrne, who's like the bad Nazi, they call upon Ian McKellen, who like plays this Jewish professor in this concentration camp. And they take him out and say, if you can like figure out what's happening, you can like give you freedom. And that was the kind of where the movie started to get really confusing, because I had basically no idea what Ian McKellen really was doing to help them. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem with the film. It's again, it is interesting and it's very different, but it just is kind of incoherent at spots, and it becomes very kind of silly and bogged down in like kind of goofy imagery. But still, it's pretty, it is a very interesting movie, and it has Michael Mann's knack for atmosphere, and it has an awesome score by Tangerine Dream. So
very cool.
Yeah, so if it does eventually come out in DVD or Blu-ray one day, I'd say watch it at least. If I actually had to compare it to any recent movie in terms of strangeness and kind of tone, it would probably be Richard Kelly's The Box, but I obviously like that film a lot more.
Gotcha.
Next, I watched the Todd Haynes film Poison. This is three separate stories. It's one called Hero, which is like this mockumentary about this 7-year-old boy who shot his dad and then literally flew away. The second is called Horror, and it's like this kind of 1950s-styled horror movie about this scientist who's able to secrete sexual desire into a liquid, but by accident he drinks it and turns into a murderous leper monster. And the third is called Homo, and it's about this gay guy in prison who begins a relationship with an inmate who he'd known from a juvenile delinquency camp when he was younger. And this movie, it's hard to kind of wholly grasp what Todd Haynes is thematically saying, like, overall. And even individually, each thing is pretty complex, but so you almost had to, you kind of have to take the entire thing at face value. You just have to see it as a mockumentary about a boy who shot his dad, or a prison story, or a horror movie. And the different kind of stylistic elements in each is really interesting, and I really enjoyed it. So I would completely recommend it. And I think this movie actually had some
You're crackling like crazy on your headset.
Oh, sorry, I was walking up.
Oh, okay.
So, actually, this movie had some controversy in the 90s. Like, I think some politician called it, like, I don't know, something. It was probably Bob Dole or something, and he said it was, like, morally unjust or something. Probably didn't even watch the frickin' movie. But, yeah, it's good. Next, I watched Werner Herzog's The Wild Blue Yonder.
Okay.
It's like a combination of narrative and documentary. In the narrative section, it's Brad Dourif as this alien. He's basically talking about his alien race's like failure to advance as a civilization, and it's like all like kind of shot like a soliloquy, him speaking to the camera and stuff, and he's like showing us these location stuff. And it's pretty interesting. And it's intercut with this documentary footage of a space mission. And Brad Dourif is basically saying that this was like the mission to go find his planet or something. And it's pretty interesting. All that documentary stuff is like awesome, typical kind of Herzog documentary stuff with like the oh music and stuff. So that's good. And though the kind of the two segments, they feel a little kind of disconnected, but still it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend it. And last, I watched Robert Downey Sr.'s film Putney Swope, which is
I don't think I've ever seen a Robert Downey Sr. film.
Well, based off this movie, you should, because it's about basically it's like this ad, like these ad executives, like kind of like Mad Men, and it's in 1969, and the head of the executive like has like dies. Like right while they're having a meeting, so at that point you kind of know the movie's tone and such, and they all hold a vote to have the new who be the next like head of the executives, and basically they're not allowed to vote for themselves, so they all just vote for the most likely guy. So they vote all for the one black guy, Putney Swope, and he becomes president. Basically, he kind of urbanizes the entire thing, and basically the kind of the black power takes over, and it's a pretty, like, I think it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. It's like silly without having any cheap gags, and it's smart without taking itself too seriously. And Paul Thomas Anderson was directly influenced by this movie for Boogie Nights, because there's the, you know, that scene in Boogie Nights with Alfred Molina where he's like listening to Sister Christian and Jesse's Girl, and he's like shooting off the fireworks.
Yeah.
Well, there's this scene where like they're meeting these Asian businessmen, and they're like just shooting off fireworks out of nowhere. So it's pretty good. And Don Cheadle's character in that movie, his name was Buck Swope, so a takeoff of Putney Swope. So yeah, it's an awesome movie.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Wow. Okay, well, let's see. I just started coming up this week. Sanctuary Season 2 is coming out, but a buddy of mine DVR'd it, so he's letting me borrow his DVR to hook it up to watch it. And it's actually a pretty interesting show. I mean, it's not going to change your world, but if you like a sci-fi show that's like, someone compared it to like, what if the X-Files, if Fox actually got to keep all the creatures that they found, that's kind of, you know, Sanctuary. It's a fun show. You know, it's worth checking out if you're curious. then I finally sat down and watched the classic Death Proof inspired Vanishing Point.
I've never seen that, actually.
You know, it's not as bad as everyone makes it out to be, I don't think.
Is it supposed to be a good movie, though?
It kind of is a good movie. I you know, it's not amazing, but any movie that has Cleavon Little as a blind DJ, you know, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, the racing scenes, it was like time stopped while I was watching that. You know, I'd stop from watching the first race that lasts, like, the first half of the movie. And, you know, I'm like, an hour's gone by already. Really? Okay, we're good for this. It definitely is not a perfect movie by a long shot. It's got its pacing problems. It's got its character and acting problems. But it's just a fun movie. I think it's definitely worth seeking out and checking out for sure. If you have a Walmart near you, actually, you might check it out because you might be able to pick it up for $10 on Blu-ray.
I think I read that Tony Scott wanted to remake it with Richard Kelly writing it. So
wow.
That'd be interesting.
You know, it's the kind of movie that I wouldn't be super opposed to them doing a remake of, because it is a pretty much a fluff movie. I mean, it's really good, and the driving is amazing. Like, the races are as he's cruising down. Essentially, the story is about a guy who ends up he delivers cars for a living between Denver and San Francisco, and he makes a bet with his drug dealer that he can get to San Francisco by like 3 o'clock the next day, and like he bets his next speed order on it.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just, you know, the plot's there by a thread, barely. But it's a lot of fun. Well worth checking out. And then finally, it's funny that you bring up Werner Herzog. I got the box set in. And it's a glorious set. And I started off with watching Little Dieter Needs to Fly. And that movie blew my mind. Every movie I see of Herzog's, I respect the man a lot more. Have you seen this?
Yeah. No, I haven't. Well, I've seen Rescue Dawn, but...
And it's interesting. When they have, you know, Dieter Dengler talking about what happened, you realize just how true to the source material Herzog was when he made that film. And Herzog takes some, he goes to some pretty drastic steps for this film. He actually goes as far as to take Dengler back to Vietnam and actually has him tied down like he was in the prison camps. And there are some scenes where he's very obviously uncomfortable with it. But at the same time, he says, you know what, this is kind of crazy. It's really bringing back some bad memories, but you know what, maybe this will help me face it. So yeah, let's go for it. In other words, I never got the feeling that Herzog pushed him too far and further than he wanted to go, like a lot of critics have said. People who didn't like the film, I should say. But the most fascinating, captivating thing is what an upbeat person Dieter Dengler is. He talks about all these horrible things, you know, his entire squad, you know, all his friends getting killed and, you know, the plane going down and all that stuff. And he's like, I saw death and death didn't want me. I mean, this is a guy who could have, you know, kind of gone down the rabbit hole of depression, but he really decided, you know, I've got things to work through. Everything's in my house is a huge open space and all that, but he's a very upbeat and just enjoys life kind of person.
So, I was going to mention that's interesting because I remember Rescue Dawn, one of the criticisms of that film was that the ending was kind of cheesy, you know, the very end.
And but that's what happened.
Yeah, but some people thought that was just, in a way, kind of the upbeat ending was Herzog kind of saying, you know, I've spent so long with this guy, I deserve to give him some happiness, you know?
Exactly.
So it's, because did it end with, like, it was like a slow motion, like, freeze frame, and I'm pretty sure there was like a star wipe and some inspirational music and stuff, but...
Oh yeah, totally. Actually, he does talk about that point, that actual moment, and he had no idea what was happening, and what had happened was... The military had gotten all of his friends and coworkers together in this one spot, and they sprung it on him. And that's pretty much what happened in the movie, too. So I was really interested to see that had actually happened.
Yeah.
And what I like about Herzog, you know, I know he's can definitely come across as kind of a megalomaniac. Yeah, you know what I mean. But the guy, you know, I think the guy's just looking out there looking for the truth. He doesn't care if he comes off as kind of a jerk or not. He's just kind of out
there. I think he's
just
passionate, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I really respect the guy with every film I watch of his. So I'm really looking forward to going through the rest of that box set.
Well, I just read this quote from him. He's like, if I had to, I would go into the depths of hell and wrestle the devil for one of my films. Yeah. So it's like, dude just got passion, you know?
Yeah, I can't help but respect the guy. I love the guy's work. I can't wait to watch more of his stuff. And that's pretty much all I watched this week, outside of our glorious featured film stuff that came out this week. So this week's theatrical releases, the big ones were The A-Team and Karate Kid. Let's talk Karate Kid first just briefly, because every review that I've read from people I respect has been like, shockingly, this movie doesn't suck.
Hmm.
which surprised me as well.
Hmm.
So, I don't know if you've read the same kind of reviews, but...
Yeah, I'm still not going to see it.
Oh, no. Lord, no. No, I have zero interest in seeing it. If I had any kind of inclination to go see this film in the first place, then yeah, I might check it out based off these reviews, but I just have no desire at all to see it. On the other hand, The A-Team, both of us saw this film. I want to hear what you say first, Ethan, because I'm guessing you didn't quite grow up with the TV show.
No, but I have seen a few episodes here and there, so.
Okay.
But I enjoyed it. It was pretty much exactly what I wanted. My only serious problem was that I felt like at certain points it was kind of veering towards taking itself seriously, and yeah, that was the absolute exact opposite of what I wanted from this movie.
Exactly.
But luckily it didn't do that too much, and there were times when, like, Joe Carnahan, it's interesting because his first film Narc I loved, and his second film Smoke and Aces I thought was an absolute pile of shit, and this movie, it kind of, at times, it shows the interesting stylist that was at hand for Smoking Aces, or to know Narc, for Narc.
Yeah.
But also shows the kind of obnoxiousness that was in Smoking Aces at times. But luckily, I felt like the Narc guy won out, and I had a good time with this movie. And I think it's totally worth seeing for Charlotte Copley.
Oh, absolutely.
He was just insane in this movie.
And, you know, I'd go as far as to say Rampage Jackson. He made me forget about Mr. T.
Yeah, it's funny though, because I read some quote from him recently where he said that acting is kind of gay. So
so we may not see him in a whole lot of movies unless people start offering him lots of money, and then, you know, he might give up on the ultimate fighting there. You know, I have to agree with everyone else that I've read reviews of. Jessica Biel was definitely the weak link in the film.
Yeah, she looked a little masculine for me.
Oh, there you go. All right. I'll steal a little bit from Barry's review that we played on Wild 105 this week, and he said, you know, there's no plot. The plot is a complete joke. It's a convoluted mess. There's bad acting. There's some off stuff, but really, who cares? Because this movie is just so flippin' fun.
Basically, yeah. Something I wanted to ask, though, at the end, there was a certain cameo by the star of a certain TV show that includes drinking, smoking, and a large-breasted redheaded woman. And was that supposed to be set up for something?
Oh, like, I don't know. I don't know. You mean, okay, not the end after the credits end, but the agent who takes over at the end? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, I was a little, like, is this, like, I was thinking, is this supposed to be saying, like, a Knight Rider crossover movie or something? I'm confused.
I don't know. I was kind of surprised to see him just walk on for a real quick cameo that lasts about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I love the guy's work, and I'm like, I hope they make him the bad guy in the next movie. I'd be kind of cool with that.
Yeah.
Because you know we're going to get a sequel. Totally.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Wow, there's just so much to talk about this movie. Seriously, if you're going in for anything remotely realistic, this is not the movie for you. Not even a little bit.
It's like that scene with the tank in the trailer. Everyone's like, oh, but you know what? I actually think that was maybe my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah. And then it went further than they did in the trailer, which made it even better.
Yeah. So, yeah, in fact, you know what? I don't think even the action in the movie is that great. I think I just really enjoyed the tone of it.
And I enjoyed the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
like I
Liam
said,
Neeson.
Charlton Copley.
Yeah, Charlton Copley. I mean, they were all good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Face kind of started striding the line between being Hannibal and Murdoch at points. But still, I mean, Bradley Cooper did great in it. Like, the main cast is all great all the way around.
And actually, Patrick Wilson, I thought, because Patrick Wilson, he's a great actor, but in some roles, he can be a little bland.
Yeah.
But in this, I thought he was just, like, hilarious.
He was swinging for the fences on this one.
Yeah.
And I think he did great. It's just such a flippin' fun movie. Like, if you want to go for a fun movie where, seriously, like, literally get a big old bucket of popcorn, grab some soda, or, you know, or go grab a beer if you're going to that kind of theater or whatever, and just enjoy the ride, because it's a fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... All right, let us move on to this week's DVD releases. Let me see here. We have got, wow, okay, there's some good stuff, there's some bad stuff, yeah. I mentioned Sanctuary Season 2 comes out. That's a pretty interesting show. It's worth checking out if you like some interesting sci-fi. We've got The Book of Eli, which I think surprised us all as to how good it was when it released. Showgirls, the 15th anniversary sensational edition on Blu-ray. There you go, some HD. I'm so excited. I don't know. Let's see. We got Flash Gordon coming on Blu-ray, Youth and Revolt, Dark Man's coming out on Blu-ray. We got the Vengeance trilogy from, you know, all those Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance all coming out on Blu-ray. We got Mystery Train from Criterion on Blu-ray and DVD. Just for Barry, we do have The Stepfather on Blu-ray, and what is still my reigning worst movie of 2010, When in Rome.
Yay.
Yeah. It was close, but it didn't quite make it. All right. Let's go ahead and talk some news, sir. What you got?
Basically, Les Grossman movie, whether you like it or not, is probably going to happen.
And which side of that fence do you sit on?
Well, the character itself, just, is there a movie, you know, is there a movie? Can that support a movie?
That's my question too. I don't mind the character. It's just, you know, in the little bits and pieces that he was in Tropic Thunder, and even the movie, the MTV Movie Awards clips were funny, but those were clips. I don't know if we can handle, you know, 2 hours of you know, Tom Cruise cussing a blue streak and that's about it, and dancing to, you know, bump and grind hip hop.
And even like I think him dancing was more funny because of Bill Hader's awkward facial reactions.
Okay. Well, even at the end, you know, during the end credits, I think it was still pretty entertaining.
Yeah, but it is a little disappointing too. Paramount is doing this movie, and they're the studio that turned down Anchorman 2 and Zoolander 2.
But they're willing to do a Les Grossman movie.
Yeah, so just like, but I don't know, maybe.
I think a lot of what happens with a Les Grossman movie is going to depend on what Night and Day does.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I hate to admit it, but it looks at least somewhat entertaining. I got to admit it.
Yeah.
Looks better than The Killers.
Oh, not hard.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true. Well, let's just talk some crap as well. We've got the new Disney film, Tangled, has a trailer. You know, The Princess and the Frog had promise. You know, I may not have loved the film, but it seemed like Disney was getting the ship righted. The animation was gorgeous. The story may not have connected all the way with me, but it was a step in the right direction. This looks like I don't know what the heck, like they're going to go make, you know, Home on the Range 2 after this or something.
Well, the only thing I have really to say about this trailer is that the dude from Chuck sounds a lot like Will Ferrell in it.
And I love Zachary Levi. Like, I love the man's work. I love his work in Chuck. I just think he's a cool guy in general. But, dude, I hope this movie does well for you, but it's not boding well based off that trailer. That's a bad trailer.
Yeah.
What else you got, sir?
It looks like Joel Silver, you know, he wants to make a Don Quixote movie. In fact, he's putting it on the fast track. And it's not going to be a faithful adaptation of the novel. Because, in fact, the main character, Don Quixote, is not actually going to be mad. He is going to just be – these manifestations of his mind are actually going to be real, and it's going to be a Pirates of the Caribbean-style swashbuckler.
Oh, dude. So it's fair to say that Terry Gilliam will not be involved in this?
No.
That's so sad.
I know. It's like Joel Silver, you know, he just got cool points for putting out Splice, and then he does this. It's like,
exactly.
Who are you?
Really, you could have done a Don Quixote movie for how long, and Gilliam's finally starting to get this one off the ground, and then you're going to go do that. I see how you are. Yeah.
I can just see this as like a Tropic Thunder or Funny People like fake trailer. Like, it'd be like Matthew McConaughey as Don Quixote or something, and him like doing a bunch of CGI stunts and stuff. And, yeah.
That just sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah.
All over the place. Oh, man. Speaking of ideas that don't make a whole heck of a lot of sense, apparently we might be getting a Taken sequel.
Hey, Taken again.
What are they going to do? Answer all the questions from the first one? Because, I mean, if they kidnap his daughter again, I mean, I love the first movie, don't get me wrong, but I just don't see a whole lot of sequel potential.
Maybe he should get kidnapped and she has to find him.
Or they could cross it over as with the A-Team.
Yes.
He forms his own version of the A-Team, except to be more of a, you know, a straight-faced action movie. No, it's still not going to work that well, I don't think. No. Not looking forward to that one at all. Have you got anything else, sir?
No.
Okay. We have got on the horizon, for all you horror fans, a remake of Fright Night. And it's funny how much genre fans will just get behind a movie depending on who's in it. Because David Tennant from Doctor Who is going to be involved in the film, and everyone's incredibly excited and happy about that. I have not seen the original, I'm ashamed to say. But it looks interesting. It looks like it could be a good time. It could be fun. It does have McLovin in it as well. And yeah, we'll just, I guess, just kind of have to see what happens with that. Let's see what else. I've got like three more news stories. I'm so sorry. Next up, we have got... Yeah, I'll get to this next. If you follow many independent filmmakers on Twitter or Facebook at all, you'll see them all starting to post, hey, add me to your Netflix queue. So I reached out to one of the filmmakers, namely Paul Osborne from Official Rejection, and said, hey, is this something that Netflix is doing? And apparently, Netflix is judging how they're going to pick up independent films based off of how many people add them to their queues.
Mm.
So if there's actually a demand for the film, then hey, that's all good. I know people outside the U.S. this does you no good, but it's an interesting development still. So you might see us starting to post links to stuff on Netflix pages, probably even with this episode for like for Official Rejection or Dahmer versus Gacy or whatever else that we have as we go forward. Just because I think it's an interesting model for Netflix to be able to gauge interest in a film legitimately.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of cool that they're reaching out that way. I guess that's kind of what I'm taking from it. And let me see here. What else have I got? Helps if I actually have freaking Internet Explorer up. I guess the last... Oh, goodness. Yeah, let's talk about it. Kim Kardashian wants to be Lara Croft.
Power to her, you know?
Has she done anything outside of a reality show and a sex tape?
I think she was in Disaster Movie.
So she's become the new... Oh, wow. Yeah, the new Carmen Electra. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just so very, very sad. I really don't care that much about Tomb Raider, but, you know, still, this would even kill it even more than, you know, Tomb Raider 2 shark-punching goodness. And then finally, I don't know if you... Did you see what Billy Flynn put up on the site this week?
No.
Oh. Apparently, in New Zealand... I'm sure you heard a while back how suddenly all this lost footage from Metropolis was found and it's been reconstituted, and I'm actually going to see the full version on Wednesday. I'm so excited to see it. But apparently in New Zealand, a whole nother set of vaults. In another vault, they found, what is it, a collection of 75 lost Hollywood films, including an old John Ford movie from 1927 called... Oh, shoot, where is it? I just missed it. Son of a gun. Bum, 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 bum. Shoot, Upstream is what it's called. Yeah, we'll just kind of see what happens with this, because they were saying essentially only about 15% of the silent era films made by John Ford have survived. So they found a whole bunch of movies. I think they were saying there's about at least like 60% of them are full movies and are actually can be restored and brought back and, you know, released. So this is actually kind of cool when you have like, you know, a big chunk of Hollywood history, film history being found somewhere just randomly. And there's these collections all over the world. I think we're going to find all kinds of stuff coming up.
That would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of excited to see some 2.5 hour Fritz Lang sci-fi. It should be good fun. Yes. And I think that's the end of the news stories. Holy crap. We actually got through it. So let's go ahead and take a break, take a quick break, summon up our reserves, try not to, you know, want to lose all love of life, and we'll be back to talk about Remember Me.
Hey, Cousin Bubba, thanks for taking me out hunting with ya.
No problem there, Cousin Cletus.
There's one now.
Relax, that bear, one of them Romero zombies. They all slow and stuff. They're easy to take out. Just gotta shoot them in the head.
I think I see another one over there. And he's coming right for us.
There's one of them newfangled models. Moves really fast, but they go down the same way.
Wow, Bubba. How you get so much learning about zombie killing?
Cause I listen to that ZNet Central podcast over at www.znetcentral.com.
That's right. For your latest in news and in-depth reviews on zombies in movies, books, TV, and video games, come on over to www.znetcentral. It's your place for all the zombie information you will ever need.
All right, kids. So, yeah, sometimes you just need to, you know, sharpen and hone your skills of bashing a movie. And we made the joke about Marmaduke last week, you know, that we were going to make it a topic. And you know what? We decided we would both take this bullet for the team. And we're going to talk about the Robert Pattinson Summit Entertainment produced Remember Me. I think it's fair to say that this is going to be pretty spoiler-filled, because you really can't talk about the depths of crap that this movie is without getting into pretty specific details.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start with this, sir?
Okay, I want to start with Robert Pattinson's performance.
Should we talk
about
the story first, or does it really even matter?
Let's just let things
Okay, we'll get to the plot. Yeah, sure, fair enough. All right, but Robert Pattinson.
Okay, his performance in this movie is so brutal. Like, he's all twitch. He's so, like, twitchy, and he so, like, wants to be James Dean. Like, he's all, like, smoking a cigarette and, like, giving these soulful looks. But the thing is, there is no actual soul to his performance. It is all pose. There is no soul in any of him. There's no emotion. There is no character. He's like, comes from the Chad Michael Murray school of acting.
Dang.
This guy is so brutal. Like, it made me, you know, maybe if a more watchable actor had played, you know, his role, maybe like, you know, Joshua Jackson or something, the movie would have been like just a little more watchable. Like, I could have like gotten through it and not been like, throughout the entire thing. But, oh my God, just him in this movie. Ah!
It was, you know, I'm trying to be soulful and brooding, but instead I'm looking like a mannequin.
Pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, like the fact that anyone would actually like this person at all, period. I can count, you know, the only scenes where he actually somewhat came to life was when the scenes involving his sister. I will give a little bit of, well, no, even then it was just kind of like Hulk angry. Yeah,
the scene where he goes to confront his dad after he skips out on his sister's recital or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, the art show.
The worst acting. Like, pay attention, Dad! You've got to, like, be serious about the people you love!
It's essentially the epitome of high school drama acting.
Exactly. It's like, people like to think, too, that bad acting is either being really flat or being really over the top. But there's ways bad acting can just be finding the wrong tone for every scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, talk about going over the top. I mean, in this movie, I think the only movie where you know what? I think Pierce Brosnan was more subtle in The Matador. Except I like The Matador.
At least even in this, at least like he had kind of campy energy, at least entertained me a bit.
What I love was at the beginning, while the family's eating at the restaurant, like his reaction was the same reaction we are. What the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, and okay, I'll say Chris Cooper, I thought, gave a genuinely good performance. Like, it's just sad, like, watching him, like, Chris Cooper is such a natural, good actor who has his character down within a second. Yeah. Like, just acting opposite Robert Pattinson. It's like, what?
Yeah. It is a brutal, brutal film. Yeah, even Chris Cooper, I think I get what you're saying that he's a good actor, but I think even in the story, I mean, this is like one of the most melodramatic films I've seen in a very, very long time.
I know, and it's not only that; it's self-important, it's pretentious, it's silly,
Let's leave out the fact. I mean, essentially, the story it's bookended by two separate tragedies, and then it's essentially like She's All That in the middle. But bad.
Pretty much. And okay, I want to mention another character, the roommate.
Ugh. Oh my gosh. He needed to get shot at the beginning, actually.
I know. Oh, and just the dialogue in this, like, I'll defend kind of like quirky, stylized dialogue every once in a while if it's good. But this movie, the dialogue is so just overwritten and trying so hard to be clever. I think it has bad actors delivering it too, so it's just like this ultimate combination of crap and puke forming together to make this puke crap. It's like, ah!
Yeah, yeah. I will say, you know, there were two decent performances, and one would have been the little sister. I think that's, was Ruby, was Caroline her name?
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. And the girlfriend was kind of okay too.
The Claire from Lost, yeah, she was all right, I guess.
But in this movie, all right is like freaking stellar.
I know, and okay, I just want to point out, okay, involving the sister, there's this thing near the end which I wasn't clear on, where she went psycho at a party or something. Was that what happened?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That was like just so strange. Then there's that scene where Robert Pattinson, like, okay, I guess spoiler alert, it's like implied that like the sister, she like goes to this birthday party, and it's like implied, you know, she can't really, she doesn't really fit in. So it's like implied that she like cut all her hair off or something, I guess. And then there's a scene where she's going back to her school, and you know, Robert Pattinson's dropping her off, and like this girl's
walking
like
her to her, not just to her school, not just to her classroom, but to her desk.
Yeah, and then the girl's like, "What'd you do with your hair?" And then Robert Pattinson just grabs her desk and like throws it, and then gets a fire extinguisher and throws it. It was like the funniest shit ever.
Yeah, this movie. It really is a failure on just about every level. But still, it wasn't as offensive as One End Room. But this movie's it's bad. To the very point, like at the beginning, I don't know if the gang members were psychic or something. You know, after they steal the people's. Again, this is spoiler filled. This is so spoiler filled. You already know what the ending is, so who cares? But it opens with this little girl and her mom standing on a subway platform. They get robbed by these two punk thug gangbangers. They get into the subway, and as the mom's looking hurt and pissed and all this stuff, apparently one of the gang members is psychic because he magically gets the door to reopen and then kills the mom.
I know, it's just the worst.
And you knew exactly, knowing the ending, you knew exactly how the movie was going to end. And you're like, this movie is actually about her torture. It really is.
And, like, there's a scene in this movie where they're watching American Pie 2 in the theater. And I was just thinking, man, if Eugene Levy had played Robert Pattinson's role, maybe I could get through this. But, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really just disturbing how bad this movie is. Like, knowing how the movie ends, that beginning just made it, like, I gave precious crap for being manipulative. I take it all back after seeing this movie.
And, you know, here's the thing. You were saying, like, you think this isn't as bad as When in Rome.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I haven't seen When in Rome, and I never will. But I'm willing to bet that movie at least does not think it's smart or, like, deep. This movie thinks it's smart and deep.
This is true. You know, the more I think about it, I'll have to rethink it a bit because, you know, at least I think I was a bigger disappointment with When in Rome because I actually liked one of the actors in it. Whereas with this, I had zero expectations and was still, you know, kind of let down. So shall we talk about the glorious plot?
We should.
And then we'll talk about the ending, because the ending really does deserve some discussion there. Okay, so we told you about the opening. Little girl gets her mommy shot, dad's a cop, and gets the scene, you know, tearful reunion, blah, 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 blah. Fast forward 10 years, because they make a point of saying that this is 1991. And they say, fast forward 10 years, and apparently you have no idea that this girl's even going to show up again, even though you have an idea. Robert Pattinson's I don't know. Is he supposed to be like some artsy guy who's just trying to find his way through life? And I don't even know what his motivation was as a character.
I don't even know what he was taking, man.
Yeah. Daddy doesn't love me. Mom's dead. I live in an apartment, in a crappy apartment with an annoying roommate. They go out and, you know, are getting ready to take some girls home or whatever. And they come across this fight that's not fair or whatever. So he jumps in and just starts beating the crap out of people because he's angry and anguished and angst, agony. And so the cops come in, and which is where Chris Cooper comes in, and they get cleared as, no, they had nothing to do with it. They were trying to just break up the fight. And not content to just, you know, walk away, you know, because these guys did kind of provoke the fight in the first place, the two guys who almost got hit by a car. And except that he says, oh, no, they almost got hit by a car. They were just defending themselves. And Cooper's like, I don't care. Go home. And then Pattinson talks smack, grabs him, and gets thrown in jail. And then they realize that he has a daughter, and they go to school with her. So, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, hit that and then drop her and hurt him that way. And then that's really the story, pretty much, isn't it? And oh, except that they fall in love for real. And then there's the classic misunderstanding of she finds out, he tells her about it. She freaks out, walks away, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, look, they end up coming back together. They end up... life ends up getting happier and happier, and then we get to the end. Is that pretty much, did I miss anything there, really?
You missed the part where Chris Cooper hits his daughter, but...
That's true. which prompts her to leave and flee into the arms of the man who has vengeance on his mind. You also have Pierce Brosnan as a father who just doesn't care because he doesn't love Robert Pattinson enough, nor his daughter, the Pierce Brosnan's daughter, not Pattinson's. And if this sounds convoluted, that's because this movie is a mess, plot-wise.
Again, it could have just been a simple character drama, but it like wants to be all smart and layered, and it's just, oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything else about the plot before we get to deconstructing the ending?
It's brutal!
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you spoil the ending if you'd like to, sir.
Okay, so we come to the last 10 or so minutes of the film, and Robert Pattinson is looking like he's trying to patch up his relationship with his dad or something. So he says, you know, go to my office, and he goes there, and he knows his desktop is... wallpaper is various pictures of him with his kids. So that proves that he does, in fact, love them. Yay! And he's like, aw. And then it cuts to his sister in a classroom where the camera pans to the blackboard where the date
is
revealed.
Subtle movie. This is the most subtle moment of the
September movie. September 11th, 2001. And then Robert Pattinson, you cut back to him standing in his dad's office going towards the window where it slowly pans out to reveal that he's in the World Trade Center. And then cut to black. Various shots of people running towards something and crying and such, and we get a montage towards the end of all the characters moving on with their lives. And the girlfriend gets on the train at the end, clearly mirroring the beginning, and cut to black, directed by blank.
Yeah. This ending, like... This is one of the... I mean, like, there are ham-fisted endings, and then there's this one. Because here's the thing. Once they don't let you... They zoom out of Robert Pattinson gazing out the office window, and they zoom out just in case you haven't gotten it yet, that this is September 11th getting ready to happen. He's in the World Trade Center. They zoom out, and you see the Twin Towers, and you start hearing a plane engine start up. You know, it's getting louder and louder and louder, and then it just cuts to black. At which point, seriously, they should have put the opening to Postal in there. It would have fit.
Even the Benny Hill music, you know.
That would work too, yeah. It's just, if you're going to go ahead and try to make an illusion and fit in what is really an American national tragedy, you don't try to cheapen it. And they found a way to cheapen it in a big way.
Pretty much.
They essentially said, we're going to make this about 9/11, but oh wait, we're going to cop out.
And that's the – maybe even in some universe there's a screenplay of this movie with that ending that works because it actually has interesting things to say and a well-developed plot and characters. But this movie just throws it on.
Yeah. Yeah, let me be clear and say that I'm not – you know, based on principle, I'm not against someone writing a fictional story based around 9/11. I have absolutely no problem with that. When you're going to layer it on that thick and put that much schmaltz and have absolutely no emotional payoff to that movie at all whatsoever, you've just cheapened the entire event in tragedy.
Basically, yeah.
Like, there was no reason for this movie to be made at all.
No, I can't. This movie is pointless. I saw no themes in it, no interesting themes in it, nothing. It had nothing to say. It had no interesting characters. It had no interesting visuals. It just... This movie was a waste of time, money, space, people, food.
Yeah, I mean, like the 25th Hour. That was a movie that was actually somewhat based around... It was based in a post-9/11 world, very up in your face.
Yeah, I think that movie is the definitive 9/11 movie so far, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. It's, you know, everything that this movie is not. I mean, if you take out that ending with 9/11, you still have the same movie, and there's no point to it at all whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's like...
There's no reason for them to go to 9/11. Zero.
I know. It's just... Oh, this... And I kind of... Like, I guess there was no real outrage over this because nobody actually saw the movie, but... Yeah. But,
honestly, thinking about this, if you're going to make this a tragedy, wouldn't it be better to have him get, if you're going to go to all the trouble of having this really slow motion drawn out shot of the girl losing her mother, of Allie losing her mother at the beginning of the film, wouldn't it make more sense for him to get shot getting onto a subway again?
Well, again, I guess in the screenwriter's mind, that would be deep and meaningful. It would still be frickin' brutal, but it wouldn't be as annoyingly cheap and offensive.
Yeah, and that's what this movie is. It is cheap overall. It takes cheap shots everywhere it can. And, you know, it's just, you just look at the character Robert Pattinson plays, you know, and you're just like, who would like this guy? Seriously.
But he's so dreamy.
Apparently. That's what I keep hearing, but I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, stay away from this movie. I guess that's what we're saying. Like, this isn't even a movie that you can, like, you know, make fun of because it's so bad it's funny. No, this is just bad.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that felt kind of good to get that off our chest. And, yeah, that's one for the team that you definitely do not need to be seeing this when it comes out next week. And, yeah, we'll probably be talking about it once or twice more during this episode, I'm sure. Now, granted, you know, at the same time, I'd like to also make it clear, we don't think our audience is a bunch of morons, so you probably weren't going to watch this in the first place, but just in case you were curious, how bad can it be? It's bad.
And it's just, the worst sin of it all, it's boring, too.
It's lazy. It's a lazy movie.
I know. You will get, I spent most of the runtime being like, there's another hour left in this, there's another 45 minutes left in this, there's another half hour left in this. So yeah. Just, no. Do not watch it at all. No, never watch it.
There is no reason for this movie to ever be watched by anyone ever. It's just such a gigantic steaming pile of crap. Yeah, just avoid it at all costs. Just in case you haven't noticed that, we're not recommending this movie. So are there any closing thoughts you'd like to make, or should we just move on and pretend that this didn't happen?
This movie is basically emotion porn.
Like I said, it's more, yeah, well, I guess. Well, except there's no emotion in the movie.
Again, it's meant to, well, it's like pornography. There is no eroticism, really. There's nothing, there's no real arousal. It's just.
Are you saying you're going to feel just as empty at the end?
Basically, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. We can say that without getting, the joke has been made. Okay, that is a very good correlation, actually, in some ways, sir. Well done. Well done. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting in theaters this week. We have got Jonah Hex.
Is that even coming out?
Yeah.
It's like a week from now, and I've like seen no ads on TV. And
I've seen ads all over the place, but it's the same one, and it doesn't look any better. It's a little disturbing. We've got Toy Story 3, which I know I'll have seen by at least once by next week. I'm going to see it Tuesday night, so hope that's good. And then in limited release, we've got Cyrus, which I know Barry said he was going to try to catch up at the Maui Film Festival while he's out there.
Very excited for that one.
Yeah, I hope it's good. And then coming up on DVD next week, there's a lot of stuff here. We have got, the Jared Baruchel. I really like Jay Baruchel, but I don't know if he's a leading man.
No, I don't think so.
Like, they showed the Sorcerer's Apprentice trailer yesterday in front of the A-Team, and we just laughed. It was just, it looks so bad.
I don't know, I'd actually watch that movie. I think it looks kind of fun.
Okay. Well, there you go. But Jay Baruchel featured in She's Out of My League. We have got a Blu-ray release of, actually it's on DVD as well, Julie Garland and A Star Is Born. We have got Death Race 2000, the Roger Corman classic, coming to Blu-ray. You can't go wrong there. We've got The Last Station coming out. Wow. And then this is just kind of hard to go through with what's the rest of it we're going to do. We're getting more Troma releases. And next week is going to bring Romeo and Juliet, which is, you know, yeah, that'll be interesting. Romeo and Juliet with a giant penis monster. Something for the whole family, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah. And then, you know, the latest Bourne ripoff movie, but this time it actually does have
Matt Damon.
That's right. He and Paul Greengrass get together for The Green Zone, an independent film that we got to see. We're going to be talking about hopefully in the next week or two. Actually, we'll probably talk about it next week. The Flying Scissors, which is about the International Rock, Paper, Scissors Tournament. It's an independent film. It's a fun movie. We'll talk about it more in depth next week. And then our crap title of the week. Anyone want to take a guess?
What is it, Dave?
It might even be the aforementioned Robert Pattinson bomb. Wow, that was really... See, there's just so many jokes to be made about this movie. Remember Me crashes into your home theater. That really, I'm like so upset at how bad that movie was.
I just want to stop pretending it exists. I just want to pretend it doesn't exist from this point on.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about like jokingly taking like the, hey, this movie wasn't all that bad. It was a pretty good movie. And I just, for like 15 seconds, I couldn't even get that far. Yeah, yeah. So on that happy note, I guess we should go ahead and wrap this up. We don't have any email this week, but if you would like to, go ahead and email us at podcast, Ethan, Dave, or Barry, all at screengeeks.com. We're working on getting a guest for next week. I'm not sure if we'll be able to swing it, but we'll come up with something fun next week. Hopefully it's a better movie than this, but maybe it'll be worse. Who knows? But until then, this is Dave.
This is Ethan.
And they need to quit making... They need to just burn every copy of that movie. Every print, every digital copy, everything.
Agreed.